listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Moving in the moment. Today is episode number 166 of this podcast. Only 500 more to go until, well, never mind. Anyway, the title of today's podcast is Moving in the Moment. How to trick yourself into beginning to get in shape. There's a concept that I stole from Buddhism, most especially Zen Buddhism. It's called mindfulness, and it's quite popular these days. Now, there's nothing magical, mystical, spiritual, or religious about mindfulness. To me, it simply means to pay attention to what's happening right now. You and I exist at a zero point in time. The past is over and cannot be changed. The future has yet to happen, and many aspects of it are beyond your and my control. But what's happening right now, right in front of you, is where you have the greatest ability to exert your own agency, to influence the course of events in your favor, and to live life to its fullest. Not being mindful, not being present, reduces your enjoyment of pleasurable experiences that are happening right now. If you're stressing out about that staff meeting tomorrow while your 3-year-old son is trying to tell you why the dog is funny, you're never going to get that moment back. Not being mindful also reduces your efficiency at whatever task it is that you're doing at the moment. Put yourself deeply into whatever you're doing, whether it be writing a podcast, teaching a martial arts class, mowing the lawn, washing the dishes, changing a diaper, or, as I will discuss later, moving and exercising. And you will do your task much more efficiently and effectively while the time seems to fly by. Another negative aspect of not being mindful is causing actual physical injury to yourself by stimulating the release of stress hormones. This happens when you agonize over something that happened yesterday, or when you stress out about something that's going to happen tomorrow. And in most cases, you can't do anything about either of those. Today I want to talk about how the principle of mindfulness helps overcome our natural laziness. Do you ever find it hard to get up off the couch or recliner and exercise? While it's true that a lot of people dread the idea of exercise, I think it's equally true that almost everyone likes or even loves to move. At the risk of sounding like a New Agey cliché, I think there's an inherent joy in movement. Whether it's hiking, dancing, sparring, hunting, even cooking or cleaning, whatever you enjoy doing well, there's a real sense of pleasure in physically navigating your environment of life like a boss. So I assert that the problem with finding motivation to exercise is not that we dread moving, it's that we dread starting to move. Once we've started moving, it's much easier to convince ourselves to continue. But once we've sunk into that couch or recliner, oh shit, man, better bring out a big-ass electric winch. Once old mama inertia has sunk her harpoons into your ass and tied off the lines, you're down for a while. Go for a 5-mile run? Are you out of your fucking mind? Lift some weights? Do a little yoga? Shut up, hand me the remote, and go away. This laziness is natural to all of us. It's in our genes. This inherent human trait is also scalable. We're lazy in both the short and the long term. It seems to apply equally to starting a single workout or to starting an entire exercise program. Now, we all know a few insufferable gym rats that never seem to miss a workout. I could even be accused of being one of them. So where do I get off commiserating with the rest of you? Well, the truth is that all of us feel the pull of the recliner, at least sometimes. It's just that some of us are better than others at talking ourselves into getting up and getting started. So, why are we as a species so damned lazy? Like I said, it's in our genes. I'm often struck by and frequently comment on this podcast about how many of our problems stem from the fact that we as a species have only been civilized, that is, we have reached a state where most of us are no longer hunter-gatherers, for a few thousand years. A few thousand years sounds like a hell of a long time. But our species is hundreds of thousands of years old. That means that our bodies evolved under drastically different conditions than those that obtain today. Despite how good it may feel to you to stay on the couch, and under no circumstances get up and, as my brother jokingly says, commit exercise, our bodies are not actually cut out to be couch potatoes. We evolved to move. But Jeff, you might say, since that is my name, how can it be simultaneously true that we evolved to be lazy and evolved to move? I think the answer is simple. The modern couch potato is an anomalous intersection between our genetic history and our cultural history. Go check out one of the few remaining hunter-gatherer groups of humans on the planet, and you will find few, more likely no, lazy slobs lolling about. They're only able to exist in a civilized world. Couch potatoes need infrastructure to survive. So if that's true, how come laziness is in our genes? Well, think about the nature documentaries that you've seen in your life. Those poor wildlife photographers had to spend a great deal of time, often hundreds of hours, just watching animals before they did something interesting enough to be included for publication or for broadcast. The average wild animal spends a huge fraction of its day being quite boring to the average human observer, moving slowly, or even not moving at all. Predators, the action stars of the natural world, are pretty much only exciting to watch when they're off hunting or fighting other predators. But in a healthy environment, once the predator has eaten its meal, it tends to be pretty boring to watch. It lies around like a lazy lump, especially if it's a male, until it grows hungry again. That's because hunting expends a tremendous amount of energy. Digesting meat also demands a great deal of energy. It's in the best interest of the predator to be lazy most of the time, and yet to also be incredibly fit when it comes time to hunt. Being a wild animal keeps you in shape and forces you to chill out when you can. The requirement to either hunt, scavenge, or forage to stay alive obviates the need for any additional exercise. Laziness is the gift that nature gives to the well-conditioned athlete. Prey animals definitely spend a larger fraction of their time than predators moving around, but it's usually at a rather casual, even stately pace. Think of the connotations of the word grazing or browsing. These are both words that stem, pun intended, from the act of moving slowly through your environment and partaking of the vegetation. Because plants are less dense in calories than meat and require a great deal of processing, like chewing and digestion, herbivores spend much more time in the quest for food than do predators. But their movement in this quest usually appears slow, stately, even, dare I say, lazy. But of course, for both predator and prey, when the predator starts to hunt, at least in your vicinity, laziness disappears for everyone nearby, and all bets are off. That's why herbivores need to be in great shape to survive, too. They need to run, to escape and evade, in order to survive and to continue to spend most of the rest of the day grazing. So the need to move to stay alive for a wild animal obviates the need for any additional exercise. And that includes humans for the first 98% of our history as a species. Okay, Jeff, cool biology lesson and everything. I get why we are naturally lazy, but what does all this have to do with tricking yourself into training? Good question, imaginary questioner. In my many years as an athlete, I've learned a few methods of self-motivation that I'll share with you. By the way, when I developed these methods, it had not yet occurred to me that they were examples of mindfulness in action. One problem is labeling, the language you use to describe moving. The words workout, warm-up, regimen, training, routine, or exercise. These are words that can stress out the couch potato and drive his or her lazy ass right back to the recliner. They make you think of the future instead of the present. Taking a cue from mindfulness, concern yourself only with what's happening right now, not with what will happen in the next minute, 5 minutes, hour, or even tomorrow when you face the question of moving or not moving once again. You're not going to exercise. You're not doing a routine. You're simply going to move. Starting to move is like pushing a car. The hardest part is at the beginning, overcoming the inertia of stillness. So rather than thinking in terms of long-term goals that you may or may not meet, just allow yourself to move for a little while. Here's a process that I learned from an old running partner. When I would bitch about how I didn't know if I could finish the 5 or 7 or 10 mile run that we had started, he would say to me, "Why worry about that? You see that telephone pole a few hundred yards down the block? Just worry about running to that. Once you get there, you can worry about whether or not you're going to run any further. And if you do, I advise you to pick out another telephone pole and repeat the process." It's easier to convince yourself to run a few hundred yards than 5 miles. Now that's a jock teaching me about mindfulness. He just didn't call it that. He called it being sensible. Here's a vicious cycle that the serious athlete often encounters. See if this sounds familiar to you. You stoutly resolve to begin a strenuous regimen of exercise. Everything starts out great. You ride the enthusiasm, and a certain number of fantastic workouts occur. But then the law of diminishing returns rears its ugly head, and you begin enjoying the workouts less. This eventually leads you to crash and burn, and you soon find yourself in the recliner with a quart of Haagen-Dazs, binging on Netflix. This is a perfect example of the results of not thinking about the present. When you tell yourself you're going to begin a challenging regimen, you're resolving to run 10 miles, when you really only need to think about that next telephone pole. If you tell yourself in advance that you're going to push yourself hard for an extended period of time, you're probably writing checks that your body can't cash. You must be able to accept that some of your workouts will be less intense than others, and that's okay. That's how you give yourself permission to keep moving. Even gentle, enjoyable movement is preferable to being a couch potato, and helps recharge your batteries to move more intensely in the future. I adapted the next telephone pole principle to my other areas of exercise. As I found myself in the recliner, rather than contemplating how hard the workout was going to be, I would tell myself, "All you have to do is sit up for 1 minute. After that, if you really, really want to lie back down, that's okay." Once I accomplished the titanic feat of sitting up for a while, I would raise the bar. Now all you have to do is stand up. Stay standing for a minute, and then if you want to sit back down, that's cool. Once I achieved that and decided that I didn't need to sit down, I'd say to myself, "We're going to walk for a while now." Maybe the walk was a warm-up before a run, or some exercise at my home. Maybe the walk was to take me to my car in order to go to the gym. In either case, at each step of the way, at each telephone pole, if you will, I mentally paused to check my physical state in the moment, and to remind myself that it was always okay to stop after the next checkpoint or telephone pole if I felt that I needed to. It's astonishing how many great workouts I managed to accomplish with this stupid little method. I think what really makes it work, at least for me, is that it pretty much takes away the anxiety of whether or not you will, quote, finish, unquote, the entire workout. In every case, whether I stopped early or not, I had moved. And more often than not, and more importantly, I usually enjoyed the workout much more using this method. And it should be obvious to you that more joy leads to more intense workouts. Despite the fact that I always knew that I was playing a bit of a mental game with myself, it didn't seem to matter. It was more like going out for a walk with my 3-year-old grandson. I'm the prefrontal cortex checking with the 3-year-old chimpanzee to see if it was okay to keep going. Try this method and see if it works for you. So don't think exercise, think movement. And don't think long term. Stay in the moment, and the future will take care of itself. All you have to lose is extra pounds, and maybe heart disease, and lots of stress. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think. And check out old episodes of the Martial Brain Podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.